You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 13th of January 2023 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. We've reached the end of another week and the weekend is almost here and you know what that means. It means we have Grandpa Dan with us today all the way from Texas. Grandpa, how are you doing, sir? How is life treating you?
2023 is here. Believe it or not, I have two questions for you, Sven. Question number one, do you still write checks? And question number two, if you do still write checks, how long is it going to be, you know, before you quit putting 2022 on your checks and you start putting 2023? That's your pop quiz question.
No, I don't actually use checks, but what I worry about is doing the date code for these podcasts. Am I going to slip up and put the wrong year code on the podcast? So I've been very careful. And it hasn't happened just yet, so I'm very pleased to say that. But something has happened with the Church of England that we are starting to see more of happening around the world. Well, in America in particular, I'm surprised this happened in Britain. And that is attempts to pay reparations to black people for slavery. And we've talked about this before, and it just seems to me that how many times are we going to end up having to pay for black people? The slave traders ended up paying for them. Then the slave owners ended up paying for them. Then the slave owners were compensated for them by the government. I think it was Britain that actually did that or played a large part in that. And now we're paying for them again, only not exactly each one of them being paid here. What we have here is a fund that is being set up. The Church of England announced that it has committed £100 million in a reparations-style package to make up for its role in the historical slave trade, a practice which it's actually helped to abolish in the Western world. The Anglican Church, which was one of the first established churches to campaign for the abolition of slavery, announced a series of measures on Tuesday that it intends to embark upon to compensate for its historic links to the transatlantic slave trade. The move, which came in response to a report commissioned by the church that detailed shameful ties to slavery, will see some £100 million from its coffers handed out on race-based initiatives, such as an impact investment fund, which will seek to create a better and fairer future for all, but in particular for families descended from victims of the slave trade. This is all at a time as parish churches, many of them historic buildings, are struggling with upkeep and even retaining members, with some 1,000 having been closed in the last 30 years, 400 of them in just the last decade. Now, this is really quite scandalous. You've got an organisation here that really did help to actually put a stop to slavery, and now they're now blaming themselves for slavery, and they're going to say that they're going to look out for families descended from victims of the slave trade. How are they going to find them? Are they going to racially profile people to decide whether they were victims of the slave trade? What about the slave trade that went on before the Atlantic slave trade? What about the Barbary slave trade? What about the white slave trade? What about the Muslims that came into Europe, raiding villages, seaside villages in Europe so that they could take slaves off to Morocco? What about the slaves from Ireland and Scotland that were taken to America to prepare the plantations before the black African slaves were taken there? Are they going to start paying them people? Are they going to start searching out for them to see whether they were victims of the slave trade? Of course not. They're just going to profile black people and help them out with this. Grandpa, what do you make of this reparations that the church are going to be paying?
Well, here in America, the state of California, because of course all things retarded come from California, is working on like a reparations thing and repaying black people for slavery. And this kind of made me think of the same thing, because like with the California plan, you have to wonder, it's like, okay, but I mean, do mulattoes get any money? Do they only get like 50%? I mean, you know, like same thing. They're setting up these commissions. I'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, they say, oh, they're going to help these descendants from slaves. But how much descendant do you get to be? I mean, here in the U.S., pretty much all, virtually all these black people that live here have a certain amount of white blood in them. They just do because of the, you know, a lot of time has passed and there has been some, you know, race mixing in there. So what about people that are, you know, one quarter white, you know, do they not get as much money? How are they going to do this? No one ever seems to answer these questions. They just talk about black people like it's this blanket term, but if they're not 100% descended from African slaves, do they cut down on the amount of money? Now, when I read a story like this, where they talk about, oh no, we're going to set up these race-based initiatives such as impact investment fund. You see, this is more words that have no meaning. What I see and what kind of clicks in my mind when I read stories like this that make talk about, oh, we're going to do this. We're going to set up this fund with this real vaguely worded mission. See, what I hear here is money laundering and stealing. Nobody's ever going to know where this money is going. I really do. I hate to sound so jaded, but as we get through the story, I don't think you're going to have a whole lot of faith in the Church of England and the Archbishop of Canterbury. I see money laundering and stealing here. You know, obviously, I don't have evidence for that. But when you set up something, it's like, oh, this is a race-based initiative for the Impact Investment Fund to supposedly help. Who's going to get that money? And how is it going to actually help anybody? And where's the money going to go? Whose hands is it going to wind up in? This is ripe for money laundering, for embezzlement, for money being used, grifted off into other places, and nobody will ever know where it is. You see this all the time here in the U.S. You have these charities, and they raise all of this money, and it's like, well, what do you do with the money? And they say, well, we're raising awareness. We're raising awareness for this sort of cancer. Breast cancer is real popular. We raise awareness. Well, how do you even define that? You raised, we were successful. People know it exists. I don't think anybody didn't know it exists. And so you have to wonder, where does the money go? Where's all these millions of dollars that people go out and raise money for raising awareness? Where does it go? And nobody ever asks. Nobody ever looks into it. These people don't ever get audited. I guarantee you this is ripe for corruption. And as, like I say, as we go through here, I don't think anybody's going to come away with the impression that the Church of England is above corruption.
Well, it does sound like rather a self-perpetuating initiative here when you do look at where the money is actually going. More research into the role of the church in slavery will also be funded by the £100 million, including examining local cathedrals and parishes which may have directly or indirectly benefited from the practice. Next year, a new oversight group will also be established to work with the church commissioners to ensure this work is done sensitively and with accountability. So they're going to use this money to investigate the church to see if they can find more connections between the church and slavery. And the more connections they get, I guess the more money they'll be able to pay themselves. I mean, it's all very bizarre. I mean, why would you be paying out these reparations in the first place? And I should imagine that most people look at it and they think, well, this is because the slaves weren't paid any wages. And because people don't think much further than that, they think, oh, they must have been really badly treated. They won't have fed them. They were beating them. They would have just worked them into the ground. And that's just all nonsense. You know, they were expected to work for their keep. They were working on farms. They were well fed. They were well clothed. They had their own living quarters. They had their own gardens where they could grow their own food. They had medicine. They were given medicine. If they got really ill, a doctor would come and look at them. They were looked after in old age. They had a pension. They had a creche for when they had children. The very fact that they did breed and have children tells you that they were not being mistreated. Because if you're mistreated, you're not going to start breeding and bringing children up, are you? They were well looked after and they were expected to work for their keep. that's all. So what really is these reparations for? Because, I mean, most people look at it and they'll say, well, it's because they weren't paid any wages, but they were paid in kind. And there really wasn't such a thing as wages, as a salary at this time, because you really didn't have very many places that you could actually spend the money. You didn't really have many disposable things that people would want to be actually spending their money on. They had needs. They had a need for warmth. They had a need for clothing. They had a need for food. All of that was provided for them. It wasn't provided for them in Africa, where they had actually come from. They were very much mistreated by these African chiefs that were the ones that enslaved them. They could end up being sacrificed. They could end up being eaten. All sorts of awful things would happen to them if they stayed in Africa. And instead, they were brought to America, and they were just given a simple task of working on a farm. And in exchange for doing that, they got their keep, basically. And it wasn't just black Africans that were expected to work in this way. White people were expected to work in this way as well, in order to work for their keep. And I guess people just don't think about it in that way. But the really shocking thing about this is that this money is really just going to go so that the church, who has already investigated itself and then said, well, look, we must pay out this money because the church has a connection to slavery, they're going to use the money to investigate themselves some more and spit on our ancestors some more, basically. I mean, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's about discrediting the people that actually built the church buildings and discrediting the church. So they're just basically investing this money in destroying themselves. It all sounds very sad, doesn't it? Grandpa, what do you make of this here, what they're going to spend the money on?
Well, yeah, I mean, the slaves that were in the slave market in Africa were hoping like crazy to get bought and sent to America. I mean, because the other option was they would get sold to other Africans or the Arabs, and they definitely didn't have as good a deal there. I think you really hit on something good talking about the way it actually was, just slaves were actually treated. Because I think one of the side effects of stories like this is constantly bringing up slavery and talking about how horrible it is to distract free people from the fact that in our society today, we're all basically slaves. You know, you think about it like this. These slaves were bought, like you said, they were bought and they had to work. They had to work on the farm. And in exchange for that, they were provided health care, food, clothing, shelter. They didn't get any money at the end of that. Maybe some got like a little allowance or something, but they were provided these things. And they say, oh, that's horrible. They weren't paid any wages. That's awful. But really, is it? You look at our general society today. You go to work, some crappy job at some, I don't know, Walmart or some shit. You get paid wages and you spend every cent you have on what? Food, clothing, and putting shelter over your head. And sometimes you can't, at the end of the day, there's not enough money. And people are literally living on the streets because they don't make enough money. If you gave me a choice, you could be a slave and work on the farm and have food, clothing, housing, and health care provided for free. Or you could be homeless and live in a box on a sidewalk in the street. I'm going to take the slavery deal every time. If you're being honest with yourself, you're going to do that. If your knowledge, your understanding of things goes beyond, I watched the movie Roots, then you're going to say, yeah, no, I would take that deal. But it really is distracting from people from the fact that so many of us, really, we live our lives as slaves. You're working. Oh, you get wages. It's not enough to pay your rent. It's not enough to pay your food. And you damn sure here in America isn't enough to pay for your health care. But hey, you're free. You're not having to work. You're not having to pick cotton. It's like you're actually coming out worse at the end of the day than under actual slavery. See, nobody thinks about that. They go on about this and say, oh, yes, this is so horrible because they can get paid wages. When you actually think about it, and slavery still exists today, they've just dressed it up. They've just done some bookkeeping tricks to make it look better, to make it look better on paper. Again, all of this whole thing, we're going to use some of this money to go back and investigate more. And this line about both directly and indirectly. Well, you can find anything if you're going to include indirectly in there. Well, you see, because the general economy, they didn't have to do this out of the other. You can invent anything to say you indirectly benefited from that because the economy is so intertwined. Well, of course, you're going to find a way to indirectly benefit from that. I mean, it's just there. You can always find that, and it just never ends. So then they'll spend more money investigating. Let's say this whole thing reeks to me of money. A lot of money is going. I mean, 100 million pounds. That's a lot of money, and that's a lot of money to disappear, and nobody's going to know where it went.
You know, it actually costs more to keep a slave than it did to actually pay people wages to do the work. And that was pointed out at the time by some very eminent people from the time. I forget the actual name of the quote, but it was pointed out that it costs more to keep a slave than it did to pay the wages. And maybe that was one of the reasons why they wanted to do away with slavery. And you brought up the Arabs there, and the black Africans were certainly better off with the whites than they were with the Arabs, because all the black African males would be castrated by the Arabs before they got taken to the Arab slave markets. And the exact opposite of that happened with the slaves that were brought to America. If a black male slave was brought to America, in a lot of instances, the person that bought them would also then buy a black female for them so that they had a wife. Because white people did not want these slaves to be wanting for anything. They didn't want them to be wanting for a wife, whereas the Arabs just castrated them because they were concerned that they might start raping their women. Whereas the white people thought, well, obviously, if we've got an adult male there, he's going to want a partner. So we'll purchase a partner for him so that he has a wife. And of course, that was the instances when they would breed. But as I say, you got the opposite with the Arabs. Getting back to this article here, the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Most Reverend Justin Welby, said, "The full report lays bare the links of the Church Commissioner's predecessor fund with transatlantic chattel slavery. I am deeply sorry for these links. It is now time to take action to address our shameful past. Only by obeying the command in 1 John 1:6-7, and addressing our past transparently, can we take the path that Jesus Christ calls us to walk and face our present and future with integrity. It is hard to do this at a time when resources in many parishes are so stretched, but by acting rightly, we open ourselves to the blessing of God," he claimed. And I thought, well, I wonder what verse that is. Surely he must have got a verse there that is condemning slavery. So let's have a look at the two verses there. They say, "If we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus Christ his Son cleanseth us from all sin." And nothing there that mentions slavery. But there are dozens of verses in the Bible that do talk about slavery. So why didn't the Archbishop of Canterbury use one of the verses that talk about slavery? Well, because all the verses in the Bible that talk about slavery are all about treating your slaves well, and talking about slaves treating their masters well and loving their master. In fact, there's one particular verse that talks about when a slave is freed, if he really loves his master that much, he can sell himself into perpetual servitude. He can get his ear pierced, and if he has an ear piercing, it means that he's open, he's owned for good, and his family and their descendants are all owned for good by the master. And there is nobody that would do that if they were being mistreated, were they? And these were Christians that were the slave owners in America, and they were following Christian law. And the Christian law was that slavery was an institution that wasn't condemned in the Bible. It just gave rules and regulations for it, and the white people kept to these rules and regulations. The black African chiefs did not have any of these rules and regulations. So this is the reason why Justin Welby hasn't brought this up. And I should think this is the reason why he doesn't really want to talk about this, but he cannot actually find any biblical justification for doing away with slavery. I mean, if he was able to find any biblical justification for it, he would have done. But he wasn't able to. And the church did do away with slavery. They did help to do away with slavery, and they should be commended for that. So why have we got these black activists going after the church and saying that the church should be paying out money for this, when the church has already gone against its own biblical teaching in order to do away with slavery? I just thought it's very interesting that it needs to be pointed out that the Archbishop of Canterbury was clearly unable to find a verse from the Bible that actually condemned slavery. So he had to find something completely irrelevant that he was quoting from. Grandpa, any thoughts on that?
it pains me enough when average people have zero understanding of the Bible. It just, it is like fingernails on a chalkboard. And you have somebody like this that is supposedly holding a position of leadership in a church, and they apparently they're either purposely being deceptive or they have zero understanding of what's in the Bible. And you really have brought up a really great point when you said they're going against biblical teaching. They're going against the truth of history. And if you look at the context of the verses here, walking in darkness and versus walking in light, they're talking about walking in truth. You can't be deceptive. And yet that's exactly what they're doing here. It's just, once again, it's that inversion, and you have that satanic element, because there is always an inversion when Satan's involved. He takes the Bible and inverts it. Always, when you have people that are promoting something that's based on a lie, they'll always whip out Bible verses. I mean, Jesus went to the desert to be tempted. Satan was whipping out Bible verses on him. You know, throw yourself off the building because it says in the Bible you won't be harmed. You know, so just because somebody can whip out Bible verses at you doesn't mean that, oh, well, that means they must be the good guys. The Bible verses he references here talks about walking in truth versus walking in lie. Darkness is walking in lies, accepting lies. And what he's promoting here is basically lies. He's promoting a lie. We've already covered, you know, the original church, excuse me, worked to end slavery. But see, now they've inverted it. And now this is all about the, of course, the anti-white race hating agenda. And so we're talking about all of this guilt that somehow the church now has, even though the church worked to end slavery, even though England worked to end the slave trade. And we'll get into it, that a little more here, I think, as the story goes. But even though they like actually sent their military out to force the stop of the slave trade, you see, he's walking in darkness. He's inverted that. You see, actually, you've benefited from the slave trade. All of that doesn't matter. We've created a new narrative. History starts now. It's more of this we see in the constant narrative and everything else around us in the West now. Everything's inverted, and everything is forget history, forget what actually happened. We have a new history. Everything starts now, and whatever we say happened, that's what actually happened.
Yeah, instead of speaking up for our ancestors, instead of defending the church, he's just going to set up this commission to try and find things that he can attack the church for by linking it to slavery. Welby has previously come under criticism for inserting his apparent left-wing political sensibilities into church business on issues ranging from illegal immigration to climate change, even controversially claiming that God is gender neutral. And each one of those doesn't appear in the Bible. There's nothing in the Bible about illegal immigration or climate change. I mean, they like to try and say that because Jesus, when he was a child, his family fled from Nazareth to Egypt, that is somehow the same as people that are trying to break into Britain from France who have traveled there all the way from Africa. And what they never point out is that both Egypt and Nazareth, Judea, were both under white occupation at the time. It was the equivalent of white people from one country going to another white country. It wasn't the equivalent of people travelling all the way from Africa to France and not claiming asylum in France, but then trying to break into Britain. And that's the sort of thing that Justin Welby is well known for. And then to claim that God is gender neutral. I mean, didn't Jesus refer to him as our Father who art in heaven? I mean, isn't that how we are supposed to pray? I think it's quite obvious throughout the Bible that God is male. To give God a female equivalent, a goddess, is to introduce feminism into things, because God does not need anyone else. He is self-contained, as it were. So to say that God is gender neutral, I mean, that is completely against the Bible. And I think Justin Welby was put in that position for his left-wing political sensibilities rather than for his loyalty to Christianity or to the church. I mean, I can remember his first sermon that he gave, and it was all based around a part of the UN Human Rights Charter. And it mentioned very little of the Bible, and it was just a sermon around the UN human rights. And that is basically, well, that just basically sums up the modern church, doesn't it? Promoting human rights rather than promoting traditional Christianity. You got any thoughts on these criticisms of Justin Welby here and his left-wing political sensibilities, Grandpa?
Well, and that's why people are leaving the church. That's why we read earlier in the same story of having to close all these churches because people are just leaving. Another thing I want to point out here, because this ridiculous bit about Joseph and Mary fleeing to Egypt, that wasn't illegal. It wasn't illegal for them to go to Egypt. They weren't breaking Egyptian laws by fleeing there. And the reason they fled there is because the government was trying to kill their child. So, you know, these same people will sit here and say, oh, I cherry pick these verses out of the Bible that says you have to obey the government at all times. Then they should have stayed right there and let the government at the time murder their child. So it's completely ridiculous. What does it take to fire somebody in this position? I don't know. Like you said, obviously they're put there on purpose. Somebody certainly there's a process that exists. I don't know. I'm not in the Church of England, thank goodness. But surely there's a process here to fire this guy to appoint somebody else. Why does that not happen? So obviously, as you said, Sven, he's put there for a reason. Not, you know, this is the saying goes, this is a feature, not a bug, that this guy is promoting this nonsense. And because nobody is doing their job, because obviously the entire organization has been co-opted, then the people are left doing, the regular people are left doing all that you can do, which is to leave, which is to quit showing. And now they're having to shut down churches. And you see, that's all these people ever do. They don't ever start their own church. They don't ever start building something new. They go in, they co-opt an existing organization, and then they destroy it. They're promoting this gibberish. The people are left, because nobody in authority is on guard to keep these people from infiltrating and keeping them out, they take over. They twist everything around. The average person that goes to these churches finally gets disgusted and just quits because, yeah, why would you? Why would you continue to go that? Why would you give them your money to support such a thing? And they start closing down and they wind up. What do? They destroy it completely. If this continues on this path, the Church of England at some point will just not exist anymore. There'll be a handful of, I don't know, woke pastors doing gay marriages, but that'll be it. The whole thing will collapse. It'll be destroyed. And you know what they'll do? They won't go and build something new. They'll go find another church and come in there and say, oh, we've got all this experience. We want to come in and help you. We can do all of these great things. And if the people running that church aren't on their P's and Q's and say, yeah, we see what you're about, get the hell out. You're not welcome here. For some reason, church leadership seems to have this real problem telling anybody you're not welcome here. They don't understand the role of a shepherd. They'll go into that church and do the exact same thing and destroy it. They're like a plague of locusts going through and destroying churches. And nobody seems to say, oh, hey, no, we got to keep that from happening. They're going to destroy it. That's all that's going to happen. All the people can do. The average person doesn't have the power to shut this guy up and fire him. So they can do, all they can do is what they can do, which is to leave. And we're seeing that. We see it was evidenced earlier in the article when they mentioned how many of these parishes, how many of these churches they're having to close down because people are just leaving. I don't blame them. I wouldn't be a part of this either.
I think people that do leave to actually set up their own churches, I think those sorts of churches are doing quite well, evangelical church, that sort of thing. And then we've also seen quite a lot of Anglicans leaving to join the Catholics. And certainly there are more people joining the Orthodox Church all the time, but the Anglican Church is just hemorrhaging members. Well, that is in Britain, at least. I think there are still quite a few in Africa. Though the Church of England officially apologised for its historic role in the slave trade in 2006, the grovelling has only continued, with church leaders issuing a second apology during the resurgence of the Black Lives Matter movement in Britain following a police killing of a black man thousands of miles away in the United States. Welby himself has also taken to prostrating himself before the woke mob, previously apologising for coming from privilege and a place of power as a white person in this country, although he has notably declined to vacate his own influential position to make way for an ethnic minority peer. I mean, he's basically apologising for being white there, isn't he? Apologising for being a white man. Who is he apologising to there? And why does he keep apologising for the church's historic role in the slave trade when they helped to put an end to it. I mean, quite clearly, this is just political opportunism, isn't it? Just jumping in there when the Black Lives Matter protests were happening and jumping in there and saying, whoa, the church is apologizing for its historic role in the slave trade. I mean, what does that have to do with the police killing a black man thousands of miles away? It has nothing to do with it. It's just political opportunism. I mean, you could say, when looking at the church, you could say, well, all of this was just bound to happen after the schism, when the looting operation took place, when Henry VIII dissolved the monasteries and gave all the lands away to the lords, and then basically made himself the supreme protector of the church and split from the Catholic Church. I mean, it was from that moment on that the church was basically an arm of the state, and which meant that it was going to promote whatever the state was promoting. And now that our state is promoting diversity, multiculturalism, transgenderism, Black Lives Matter, of course, that is what we now see the church promoting. Thankfully, we do still have the Bible with us that has not been politically corrected. I do recommend people read their King James version of the Bible. Grandpa, what do you make of Justin Welby apologizing for being a white man here?
It's amazing because they talk about, and I'd say this Catholic Church, I mean, let's be honest, it doesn't look much better, does it? So you see this co-opting at every level and all of these different denominations. There's so much of the truth, has been shrouded. Now, you use his very own words, his very own Bible verses he whipped out earlier, talking about walking in darkness. If we still walk in darkness, we don't have any part of him. And he is his own words, by using those verses, have come back to bite him. Because if he was walking in the light of truth, he would admit that, George Floyd died of a fentanyl overdose. I mean, that's plain simple. I don't care what the courts said. The courts went along with the mob and said, this cop somehow killed him. But I mean, the medical examiner, the truth here, if we walk in the light of truth, then the truth is he died of a drug overdose. Now, if we still walk in darkness, we have no place in him. We have no part with Christ. See, he's condemned himself by whipping out that verse earlier on in the story. And we see that because he's not partaking in the truth here. Also, he's prostrating himself. And I was thinking of the picture because you mentioned the Catholic Church. You have all these pictures where the Pope is going out there kneeling down, getting down and bowing. You had all these people taking their knees and bowing down to the Black Lives Matter movement. And yet, what do we read in our Bibles? When the apostles would go into a town and try to start a church and they would perform miracles, people would be so awestruck, they'd run over and bow down before them. And what did they say? Don't do it. Don't do it. Get up. I'm just a man. When we read in the Bible, angels themselves would appear and people would be like so terrified, they'd fall down and bow down. And they'd say, no, don't do that. That's for God only. Get up. And yet, what do we see? Church leaders here, when the Black Lives Matter is going, they're all taking a knee and bowing down. They're bowing down and saying, this is a righteous, good thing we're doing here. We're going to get down and bow down before these other people, before other men. And everybody says, applaud, such good people. You're doing such a good thing. As all this anti-Christianity that is demonstrated time and time and time again from all these different elements of these different denominations of the church, I find it quite sickening, Sven. We don't do that at the Parish of the Patriots, of course. We don't do that. I don't know. Like I said, the Catholic Church isn't much better. You mentioned the evangelical churches. They're off on, so many of them are off on this weird route, where they think that you got to send money to Israel because that's what God wants you to do. So they're screwed up. The Catholic Church is screwed up. The Orthodox Church seems pretty based. I mean, I can't sit here and say I know everything about that because I don't. But I mean, it's just where people, they're leaving the Church of England. There's a spiritual hunger among the people. And where have they got to go? All of these churches have been subverted, and still you'll have people say, oh, there's no spiritual element to all of this stuff we see going on in clown world.
Well, I guess you still have the online fellowship, the online community, Christian identity. I mean, the Catholic Church is just as corrupted as the Anglican Church. Most of the modern churches are, unfortunately. But as I say, we do still have our non-politically corrected Bibles, so we can always go back to the Bible to find traditional Christianity. Getting back to our notes here, the Archbishop would go on to declare that there is no doubt when we look at our own church that we are still deeply institutionally racist. Let's just be clear about that. How is the Anglican Church racist when it has black archbishops, when it has Millions of black Christians in churches run by black bishops in Africa. How can you say that the Anglican Church is racist? I mean, we have the Archbishop Desmond Tutu. I mean, we even have South African blacks that we have made into archbishops in the Church of England. Responding to the announcement of the latest woke move by the established Church of England, Reverend Calvin Robinson, a deacon in the Free Church of England, which sticks to more traditional Christian teachings, said Welby apologises again and commits £100 million towards woke virtue signalling. The idea of reparations is ridiculous. The Christian abolitionists initiated and organised the abolition movement. They ended slavery. This money could be spent funding parishes in dire need of support. And Calvin Robinson is black, and you know what the church did to him? The church prevented him from actually having his own church. They prevented him from being a vicar of his own church because of his political beliefs. And yet here you have a black vicar who wants to teach in a church, who tries to promote a traditional view of the Anglican Church, and the Anglican Church responds by refusing to actually give him his own flock. I do follow Calvin Robinson on Twitter. He does send out a lot of what people would call as based tweets, supporting people such as Enoch Powell. But as I say, he just gets rejected by the own church that he has chosen to become a part of. Grandpa, what do you make of this accusation that the church is racist?
Well, that kind of reminds me of, I don't remember which denomination, because I think it's actually happened to several, but, you know, the Protestant denominations, you know, was having a big get together and their convention, and they were going to vote to promote the gay stuff, of course, because that's of course they would. And it was the African churches that were the only ones that held the line, and to the point to where the church organization told them, well, if you don't get in line and go along with the homo agenda, then we're going to pull your funding. And they told them, well, we don't care. Even if you pull our money, we're not going to go along with this. And it was actually the African churches holding the line. When you read this first part, he talks about, you know, how the church is still racist and institutionally racist. I was thinking about how the Bible says, if you don't love your brothers, you can't claim to love God. How can you love your brothers? Well, he obviously doesn't love the church. He's insulting it. He's running it down. It's institutional racism. That's not a compliment. That's not a statement of love. He obviously despises the church. So there is no love. And finally, you know, people have this idea that, you know, that, like, you know, when the Bible talks about, you know, worshiping the beast, you know, like in Revelations, and people, you know, bowing down and Satanism, things, they imagine like this idol sitting somewhere and everybody's bowing down to it. But I believe that it's very much representative of going along with the lie. This guy here is going along and bowing down and promoting all of these lies. It's either truth or lie. It is or it isn't. The truth stands. It doesn't vary, shape, shift around. It is what it is. And you have these people like this that go along and promote this stuff. Whatever's popular right now, regardless of what's in the Bible, whatever is the narrative now, they bow down and worship it because they promote it, and they insist that everybody else go along and promote it too. You have to go along with it. You have to agree with this. Otherwise, as you sit here, this church guy here, he didn't go along with it, so he's kicked out. You know, you're not allowed to do that. You can't promote your truth. You see, they hate the truth. You can't hate the truth and love Christ or have any part of it in with him. That's what the verses he spoke of earlier about walking in darkness versus walking in light. You can't love the lie. And this guy obviously loves a lie. You can't love the lie and have a part of Christ. So this guy has no relation to Christianity. He doesn't. He doesn't have any relation because he's promoting a lie. And the church official here who speaks up and says, the Reverend Calvin Robinson, I'm sitting here trying to talk and read at the same time. You know, he's trying to speak up for truth. And what did they do? Kick him out. Oh, you can't have no part. You can't be telling people the truth. This is what bowing down and worshiping these lies. This is what it's about. And it's an easy thing. People get sucked into it, and you see it more and more. And it's in all of these churches now. I mean, not all of them, but in so many of these churches now. It's like inescapable, Sven.
Calvin Robinson shames, you know, the other British vicars by upholding traditional teachings in the same way that the African churches shame the British churches with their upholding of moral teachings. And the Ten Commandments tell us that we have to honour our ancestors, and Justin Welby dishonours his ancestors. Well, Robinson, who is of mixed race heritage, went on to note that 19th century English politician and leading abolitionist William Wilberforce was motivated to end the slave trade by a desire to put Christian principles into action and to serve God in public life. Indeed, following the passage of the Act for the Abolition of the Slave Trade in 1807, which was championed by Wilberforce, the Royal Navy captured an estimated 1,600 slave trade ships, freeing some 150,000 African slaves in the process. Some 1,587 British servicemen in the West Africa Squadron lost their lives fighting to end slavery between 1830 and 1865. And that was just off the coast of Africa that they lost their lives, and it was the African chiefs that refused to put an end to slavery. That's why they had to have the Royal Navy around Africa, and these British servicemen, they lost their lives to these tropical diseases and fighting against these African chiefs that wanted to keep slavery going. There was an interview that was being done, I believe it was by CNN, and they had a royal spokeswoman on there, and the royal spokeswoman pointed this out and said, yes, well, if we're going to pay any reparations, they should be paid to the families of the British servicemen that lost their lives actually putting a stop to slavery, rather than paying out once again to the descendants of the slaves. And I say once again because those slaves have actually been paid for three or four times now, when you think about it, like I said at the beginning of this program. But the British servicemen that lost their lives putting a stop to slavery, nobody talks about them. Nobody talks about compensating them. How about we just forget about these things that went on in the past, and trying to project today's views and morality onto the past, and we just get on with life today, instead of trying to find things that we can dishonor our ancestors for and criticize our ancestors for. In I don't know what it is, this bending over backwards to try and appease these other peoples. I mean, this getting down on one knee, it really is emblematic of the modern Western world, isn't it? Getting down on our knees before another ethnic group who are really just our competitors. We're all competing together on this world for resources, influence, and power. And as white people, we seem to have stopped competing, and we are now competing for these other groups instead of for our own group. Grandpa, what are your thoughts on this and the Royal Navy losing so many lives fighting to end slavery?
Well, this kind of puts an exclamation point on it. I mean, the truth is the truth, and here you have a statement of the truth. This is what actually happened. These people promote this narrative lie, and a bigger part of this, and the reason why they subvert the church in doing so, is they're trying to replace the truth, and by extension, they're trying to replace traditional, real, natural order morality with their new morality. You see, they're trying to replace the morality of our ancestors, the morality of the Bible, the morality of God, with their morality, with their new morality. You see, we're created a new morality. This is all about anti-racism and how everything to do with white people is evil. You see, we have a new morality, and you can't have a new morality without replacing the old morality. It's about replacing God's laws. It's about replacing the natural order. It's about saying, denying those things, those truths, and replacing it with their new morality based on lies.
The old morality comes from God, and the new morality comes from man. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Grandpa. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless, and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.